Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
It is the APC podcast here at acmepackingcompany.com, part of SB Nation and Vox Media. And hey, wouldn't you know it, in times past, there wouldn't be such a thing as a legal tampering period emergency podcast. But the Gutekunst era is well underway. And here we are a day or so before free agency starts as we record this. And there is need to disseminate news. Oh my God, I never thought it would happen. But it's happened, and we are here, dear listeners, to talk it through with you. I am Zach Rapport, at Zach Rapport. Follow the show at the APC Pod on Twitter. And I am joined, I'm in Albuquerque, and I'm joined by Ben Foldy, rocking it in the New York studio with Amber Watson Engineering as well. Thank you, Amber. Hey, Ben, how are you?
I'm good at the Craig Newmark School of Journalism at the City University of New York. And that's my Daryl Rovell shout out. And yeah, I'm all right. I'm tired. But other than that, I'm excited by a bunch of signings that I never thought I'd get a chance to talk about vis-a-vis the Packers.
I'm excited too, man. And I'm also excited to be joined by our fearless leader, Evan Tex Western, our corporate overlord at acmepackingcompany.com, joins us to help us break down all the crazy news from today. Tex, how are you?
Man, I can't remember a day like this in free agency ever. The news just kept coming, you know, one thing after another over the span of about 2 hours this morning. And yeah, I'm amped up. I'm excited.
I don't really know how to feel. Like I feel these are feelings that I don't know how to reckon with so far.
Yeah, it's a strange new world, huh?
I mean, I feel like even if I weren't a Packers fan, they're an interesting kind of signing, right? Like they're not the biggest names, but they're really good team fits and they're really team friendly deals, and they're all pretty young, right? Like nobody's on the wrong side of 27, even, I don't think.
You're always talking about the right side and the wrong side of age. That's a real sticking point with you. But
well, I mean, it's like a cliff.
That is true. For most people, that is definitely true. Well, why don't we, Ben, as you alluded to, just sort of get right into it and break down sort of the names, the numbers, the fit. Tex has graciously offered to join in and help walk us through some of this as well. So before we get into this, it is important to remind everyone that because NFL contracts are not fully guaranteed, you know, try not to get too hung up on sort of the big total number that you hear. A lot of the back end numbers are kind of essentially funny money, as friend of show Justice Mosqueda likes to say. But with that, we're going to start with Smith and Smith. We'll get the Smiths out of the way here and start with former Ravens pass rusher Za'Darius Smith. Firstly, I will give props to Packer Ranter on Twitter for being the first to announce it as the dawning of the age of Za'Darius. But we here at the APC podcast do have legal claim to that joke. And so we do plan to beat that into the ground. But anyway,
I'm really glad that that's caught on just as like a general touchstone of Packers fandom. I'm also glad that we can continue it. Like it really breaks my heart when we don't have an Arius to celebrate.
Well, we got a good one here. It's a 4-year deal worth $66 million reportedly. Smith is 26 years old, was a 4th-round pick by the Ravens in 2015. So Tex, let's start with you. You know, this was a name I think on a lot of fans' wish list. Can you tell us why? Like, what's to like here?
Yeah, there really is a lot to like here. And first, I think I'll start with the connections and why this signing made sense and why it should have been something that we should have seen coming. I think it was Sunday night. Peter King of Pro Football Talk published a little blurb about the fact that the Packers apparently had tried to trade for Za'Darius Smith sometime in the last couple of years. So he was clearly on their radar already. But then you also have the fact that Ravens scout Milt Hendrickson came over into the Packers front office this year. And certainly he's got some familiarity with Smith, would have been in the front office when Smith was drafted. And I think that plays a little bit in here too. But when you talk about a player and a scheme fit, I don't think there's a better fit for the Packers in free agency than this guy. because he's a stand-up outside linebacker on your base downs. He's also big enough and got the versatility to drop inside as an interior rusher on passing downs. So you can get him, you can get Tyler Fackrell on the field, you can get Reggie Gilbert, you can get all these pass rushers on the field in different ways. And I think Mike Pettine's really going to have a lot of fun getting all these different pass rushers on the field on third downs and really turn up that pass rush when he gets the other team in long down and distance situations.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is one of those, like, I agree with Tex. It's just a perfect fit. Coming up to today, all the talk was Dee Ford and Justin Houston and all that. And I think this might actually be it's a better fit at a better price than either of those guys would have been, is my sense.
Yeah, I'd say one thing on the price. I did actually think he would sign wherever he ended up for a little bit less money than he got in Green Bay. I think it's sitting at about $16 million a year or so on the contract. And that actually surprised me a little bit that it was that high. But as we'll see, is going to be a trend with all of these contracts that the Packers agreed to today. They gave themselves a lot of flexibility in how they handle this moving forward in the next 4 years. It looks like they're probably going to have a pretty low cap hit in year one. So they reserve a little bit of cap space for this year to hopefully make a couple more moves on the margins. But then they also, looks like they're going to be giving themselves some easy outs towards the end of these deals, 2021, 2022, down the road. And so if any of these guys don't live up to their contracts, as you mentioned with the funny money, it looks like the Packers are going to be able to get out from under these deals, including Za'Darius Smith, you know, after 2, maybe 3 years without too much pain.
And Tex, you are too modest to promote yourself, so I'll do it for you. But I assume that some of the numbers you're talking about here are available on the article you published today at acmepackingcompany.com, projecting contract structures and cap hits for the Packers for free agent signings. Is that right?
Yeah, I did. I took a stab at trying to project each of these four contracts. And in the last couple hours since I published that, it looks like we got some reported numbers for everybody except Za'Darius Smith. So I'd like to think I did a pretty good job. I actually overshot the 2019 cap hits for all three of the other players. So the Packers actually gave themselves a little bit more flexibility this year than I expected them to, which again, that's kind of nice, and the way they structured the deals helps out. But yeah, check that out. It's got our my projections as well as what we do know about all three of the other players' contracts so far, and we'll get to those shortly.
Awesome. Yeah, let's move on then to Preston Smith, the other Smith, another linebacker added to the mix today, this time from Washington, reportedly is going to sign a 4-year deal worth upwards of $52 million. The 26-year-old Preston was drafted 38th overall in 2015 by Washington, and in 4 seasons there accumulated 24.5 sacks and 4 interceptions. And hey, that's not too shabby, Tex. What do you think about this move?
Yeah, you know, Preston was the Smith that I kind of had my eye on early on in the free agency process as being a good fit. And he's just as good a run defender as he is a pass rusher. But you know, don't let his 4 sacks in 2018 fool you. He was getting to the quarterback with regularity. And I think you'll probably end up seeing him, my guess would be on that right side opposite the left tackles. And then you'll probably see Za'Darius on the left side against right tackles. But, you know, both of these guys, they're productive. They're good fits in the scheme. They're both big enough, again, to rush from the inside or rush from the outside. And you could really use them interchangeably, too. So this is another good move. It looks like about $13 million per year. But, again, you've got a real low cap hit in year one. Looks like just about $6 million before it starts escalating in the next couple of years. So, again, the Packers giving themselves some flexibility both now in 2019, as well as moving forward in the next couple of years with the way the financials are structured.
There was the year that Nick Perry started coming on in the playoffs and Dayton Jones kind of turned a corner too. And it seemed like the team was just kind of like, okay, one of these guys is going to work out, so we'll sign them both. I like the redundancy element. I like Smith's durability. I don't think he's missed a game in 4 years,
yep.
which is pretty good. I mean, now that I said that, of course, he's going to miss, you know, the whole season.
It's all your fault.
Yeah, I mean, I like the durability. I like the versatility. Tex alluded to the run stopping prowess. And I think both of these guys fit into the kind of Mike Pettine, somewhat amorphous defensive front and, you know, mix and move parts, right? Like, and I think that with Kenny Clark and Mike Daniels kind of providing that push up the middle, I think that these are going to be real, real big adds. You know, no knock on, you know, last year's, you know, great white hype of Kyler Fackrell, but I'm more excited to see these guys out there than I am to see him. Anyway, I know we'll get a comment about that from some Fackrell family member, but that's fine. I'm used to it.
Sticking with the defensive side of the ball, former Bears safety Adrian Amos got in the mix here in Green Bay, a 4-year, $37 million deal, again, reportedly with $12 million guaranteed. Amos is just 25 years old, a fifth-round pick by the Bears in 2015. Tex, let's start with the player behind those numbers. What do we know about Amos as a player and his potential fit in Mike Pettine's defense?
Yeah, Amos is going to be a really interesting player to see where he lines up in Green Bay, because he really lined up all over the place for the Bears. Free safety, lining up deep. He lined up in the box as well, a little bit of slot. And again, this is another, I think, a great fit for what Mike Pettine likes to do. He likes to move his safeties all around the field. And he likes those interchangeable players who can play in different areas so that, again, you can keep the offense guessing. And I think Amos fits that philosophy to a T. He didn't have as many big splash plays as Eddie Jackson, his counterpart at the other safety position in Chicago. But I think what you see with him is you see a guy who takes good angles to the football. He doesn't miss a whole lot of tackles. He might not make the big splash plays or the big hits, like, let's say, a certain recently departed Packers safety who left for Washington midseason last year. But he gives you the consistency and he makes the smart plays, and he helps everybody else around him look better. And I think that consistency is what the Packers have needed at the safety position for several years. And it looks like he's going to provide that. And he's, again, another player who is consistently available, too. He's only missed 4 games in 4 years. And so that, I think, is also a factor that the Packers are probably looking at.
I think also this is one of those places where I know Justice Mosqueda talks a lot about how since the CBA has changed that you know, you want to pick up guys who have been in the league a while, and you don't have to train them up in a system as much, and because you don't have that OTA, you don't have the practice time that you used to. And I think this is actually a really smart move. And I know this is like my calling card, but like he's 25, I think. Like he's a 4-year veteran. He's on the young side, but he's a 4-year veteran, durable, a lot of experience and a great defense. This is actually, I think, my favorite signing of the day. I haven't quite decided yet, but that's where I'm leaning towards.
I think all told, when it comes to the defense with all three of these signings, you really free up yourself if you're Brian Gutekunst to go best player available in the draft. You don't need to necessarily lock in on one of these couple of pass rushers at 12. You don't really need to lock in necessarily a safety at 30 or 44. You can maybe wait on those positions if there's, let's say, that you really value a tight end like TJ Hockenson highly. You know, now you've got the flexibility to go get him at just pull the trigger on him at 12 instead of, you know, feeling like you're pressured to take an impact pass rusher with that first pick. So setting this up down the road for the draft, I think these moves are going to have knock-on impacts down the road in the next couple months.
Knock on wood.
Well, let's switch over from defense to offense, as the Packers did, adding some much-needed help along the offensive line in the form of Billy Turner, who is a third-round pick in 2017. He's a little older, 27 years old. Ben, get your hackles up. Has spent some time at both tackle and guard for the Dolphins, the Ravens, and most recently the Denver Broncos. Tex, I'm not sure if Turner was a name on the average fan's radar, but can you convince these people why this was a good signing for the Packers?
I'll correct you there. He was actually drafted in 2014, and then he bounced around a little bit. He's got 2 years of starting experience, one in Miami in 2015 at right guard, one last year in Denver at left guard. Around that, you know, in between there, he started, I think, two games in 2016, got cut a couple times, like you said, moved teams. And then in Denver in 2017, he landed on injured reserve and missed most of the season. So you're really banking on him developing and having this one real good year of production in 2018. Now, again, the financials of this one, it looks like a big deal. Again, it's, I think, about $7 million a year for a guy who's essentially, you know, started 11 games in the last three seasons. That seems like a shockingly high number. But again, they left themselves some outs after year one. They could get out without too much financial pain. And certainly you pencil him in as the starter at right guard. He's also got the ability and the experience to pop out to right tackle. So I think there's some insurance here for Brian Bulaga as well. Potentially looking at Turner as, some additional insurance there, depending on what they do with Jason Spriggs after this year too. So there's versatility on the line, and there's some solid athletic ability there. And again, I think they're banking on this player being on the upswing after having a real good season last year. And you're starting to see as the day goes on too. This is kind of the going rate for some of these, you know, decent but kind of question mark and unproven offensive linemen. $7 million a year is about what it takes to get a guy like this who can come in and you think can solidify a starting spot, but at the very least compete and give you versatility.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the versatility is really the key to the signing for me. I think it's a little better. I would have been okay with a veteran kind of right guard Jari Evans type signing, but I think this is probably a similar-ish contract for a longer term with more kind of winning outs. You know what I mean? Let's say Bakhtiari only plays five games next season. You know, you have that insurance built in. You don't have to throw in, presumably a rookie prospect or, you know, Jason Spriggs at right tackle while you're hopefully having a better season than the Packers had last season. So I think the kind of like Don Barclay kind of, wild card backup / fill in wherever, like, I think that's a fine thing to throw money at for the offensive line. And I'm okay with this. I agree that it's the least exciting of the signings. But I think anybody who watched the offensive line last season has to be excited about some prospect of improvement there. So, especially at guard.
Yeah. And it really quickly, in defense of Mike Gaff there, the 7 and the 4 are right next to each other on my keyboard. That's why I said 2017 instead of 2014. But Ben, I would have to agree. It is both the least sexy of these legal tampering period signings today, but as well just like something that I think was extremely necessary. And Texas, you alluded to earlier, all of these signings, I think, put the team in really good shape going into the draft to kind of take best player available. So that wraps up all of the signings from day two of the legal tampering period. There were a few sort of newsworthy nuggets that I wanted to take us out on. And Tex, I'll start with you here. Nick Perry, it looks like he was informed that he will be released. I believe Rob Domoski was the first to report that. Was this a surprise to you? What's your take?
Not in the slightest. I had actually written about this a couple times over the course of the last couple months. And the only part that's surprising to me is that they elected to just release him outright rather than cutting him as a post June 1st release. So the details there are basically cutting him the way they did. They have to eat about $11 million on the cap this year, but then they're free and clear. So they get about $3.5 million of extra cap space this season, as of today, as of cutting him. If they had cut him with that post June 1st designation, they would have saved about $10 million on the cap, but they wouldn't actually get to use it until June 2nd. And then they would still have a little bit of extra dead money in 2020. So it sounds like they just wanted to get free and clear, get that little bit of cap relief now. And in total, it looks like, you know, we're looking at around, you know, $13, $14 million in cap space left over once we have all these signings and the Perry release all in. So that's enough room to make maybe one more notable move. And I'll see if you guys maybe see where you think they should go. And if you can see what my ideal final free agent move would be.
Mine is giving Bashaud Breeland a raise.
Bingo.
I don't know if okay. Yeah.
Yep.
I mean,
yep.
That to me, that's like, oh, you have $3.5 million lying around? Like, all right, pay the man his money.
Yep. I think that you know, that position quickly turns from a position of strength to a position of let's say less strength if Breeland doesn't come back. And now with that added cap space, with the way they structure these deals, they've certainly got enough money to bring him back for let's say maybe a 2 or 3 year contract. Sounded like he wanted to come back. And it certainly seemed like he provided a great presence in the locker room as well. So I think if the Packers can land Breeland, bring him back for 2019, given what we've had in these first four signings, I think this has got to be a slam dunk free agency season for the team just as a whole.
Yeah. I think I agree. Cut some, I won't say dead weight, cut some weight, and really, as far as I can tell, get better on both sides of the ball.
None of the weight is dead weight. Ben, you love all your Packers sons.
I do. I none of the weight is, even Kyler Fackrell. No. Yeah, Breeland is really, I think if Breeland doesn't sign, I feel a lot more skeptical. Not to the extent that I'm like worried, but I don't love the idea of having to spend another, you know, first or second rounder on corners. And we may well do it anyway, but I think it's finally getting to be time to replenish other positions with our earliest draft capital. And I'm excited for that. I'm like, you know, I think this is actually a pretty decent draft to be picking where the Packers are, and to have some extra picks lined up. And yeah, I'm definitely into the way that this offseason is shaping up.
And we will have time in the coming weeks to really dig into all that stuff. But we have one more sort of newsworthy nugget that I thought was worth mentioning. And that is Anthony Barr, famous Vikings player, Anthony Barr, infamous in Packers circles, sort of agreeing in principle to a deal with the Jets and then saying, psych, I'd rather go back to Minnesota. And as I tweeted out earlier today, Barr staying in Minnesota means that many Vikings fans can continue to celebrate what they view as their crowning achievement as a franchise, injuring a rival player. So that's cool. Tex, what's your take?
Well, it's kind of interesting because some of us have talked about this offseason and where Anthony Barr was going to go and if he would go to a team that would use him more as a pass rusher, as kind of a 3-4 outside linebacker, which is what he played in college before he landed in Minnesota. And obviously, that's not what he's going to do in Minnesota. He's going to go back and kind of play that same role in that Zimmer defense that he has been, you know, for the first few years of his career. I think from his perspective, the money looks like it's going to be about the same. So I understand staying where you're comfortable and in a role that you're familiar with. But from the Vikings' perspective, it surprises me that they were willing to up their offer, especially when learning that that the team is going to have to go to Everson Griffin now and ask to restructure his contract to make the cap space to bring Barr back. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me why you would take a very good edge rusher like Griffin, either ask him to take a pay cut or eventually cut him, to then pay a guy a lot of money to play off-ball linebacker and he has the skill set to play edge rusher. It just doesn't really make a whole lot of sense to me. As far as a prioritization of your money and resources, as to the defense. So that's kind of where I am. I certainly understand it from Barr's perspective, but as far as what the Vikings are doing, it doesn't quite click for me.
I think one of the things that might make a little sense in this is if they are bringing him back and they expect to move on from Everson Griffin for whatever reason, you know, there's some, what I'm not going to speculate about his health, but last season was a weird one to say the least. You know, that might be the way to do it. Like just be like, okay, here, have some money and move outside. But I honestly have no idea because I don't pay that much attention to the Vikings unless we're playing them in football.
All right, guys. Well, I think that brings us three and our listeners up to speed on the legal tampering period here. And free agency hasn't even begun. Set to begin tomorrow as we record this, Wednesday, 4 p.m. Eastern. Tex, thank you for joining us. Any closing words here for the listeners?
I now feel like I have absolutely no idea what the Packers are going to do at 12, 30, and 44. And that's kind of a fun way to go into the draft.
Yeah, and hopefully here sometime in the next few weeks we can get someone like Justice Mosqueda or maybe Jake Ogden at Seeds of Jake to join us and talk a little bit about what they expect the Packers to do or what they would really like the Packers to do. So stay tuned for that, everybody. Keep it locked in here for Ben Foldy, for Alex Patakis, who is not here today. I am Zach Rapport. Thanks again to Tex Western. Thanks to Amber Watson in New York Engineering with Ben at the Craig Newmark School of Journalism. Follow the show on Twitter at the APC Pod. Subscribe and give us a rating on iTunes. And exciting stuff here in Packerland. So until next time, go Pack, go.